I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round. To be back where the boys all know me, back where the girls all bow.
This is the North Carolina Theater Story Show. I'm your host, Lynn Pryor. James Johnson is our technical director. You can listen to this and all previous episodes at nctheaterstories.com. We're coming to you from 100-year-old house, former home of the Gilbert Theater, here in historic Haymont in Fayetteville, North Carolina. This is our encore show. I am joined tonight by two guests. They have been considered almost in a pejorative way as my right and left hand. I just found that out tonight. Well, they were my right and left hand for all those years. And I'm glad that they're both here. One here in the studio, a.k.a. the dining room. Mimi Carter, welcome.
Hello. Glad to be here.
And this other one, it will be coming to us through the miracle of airwaves or whatever. James is being taxed to the limit here tonight, bringing our second guest, Marcella Gonzalez, calling us from the Big Apple up there in New York. So she'll be joining us later. But right now, Mimi, this is absolutely a dream come true. We've been trying to get you on the show, but you are living in Thailand, in Bangkok.
That's right.
And are back here to see family, your wonderful granddaughter, grandson, Jackson. Mm-hmm. But here you are at last. So this is why we're doing this encore episode. And we're going to have a hell of a good time tonight.
I hope so.
Now, Mimi, tell me, when did you and I meet?
Well, we didn't actually meet face-to-face. I called you because there was a notice in the paper when I first moved to Fayetteville. I had come from a pretty good theater scene in Kentucky. Uh-huh. And then when I got here... When I got here, I was desperate to find something, and my family was like, you need to get out, Mom. You're starting to get itchy. You know, go find something to do. So I answered the ad in the newspaper, and I thought, oh, Lynn, I'm going to call her, and she's going to give me a job. I just know this. And you answered, and I went, and stumbled a little, and found out I had called the right number, and we
talked for an hour.
For an hour. It was just like we were meant to know each other.
Well, you're instant friends.
We were.
And our friendship over these last 20 years has not taken a single dip.
No, not at all.
Even though you've been bossy at times.
What? I can't. Just be quiet a minute and I'll talk. No, I'm kidding.
Now, so that was the introduction over the phone.
Right.
So then you are finding out where to come, 647 Brandt's Lane.
That's right.
In the old historic district here.
Yes.
And what was your impression as you...
Well, when I first drove up, I'm like, is this the right spot? Should I be going in here? I wasn't quite sure, but you told me what the house looked like and everything. So I went to the door, right there off of the garage, and I opened the door, and the smell just overtook me. It just smelled like home. It was just a magical. It's just hard to explain in words how magical it was. I knew. This is where I had to be.
Oh, marvelous. I've had several people say that about the smell.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my God, we better get the Febreze out. But they meant it was something special, something theatrical.
Yeah.
That's what, you know. So then you walked in and I greeted you and undoubtedly took you on the grand tour.
Yes, you did. I stepped up one step onto the stage, I believe. And went, wow.
Well, what did you think of this 11 and a half by 13 stage?
It was such a change from what I was coming from. It was a huge theater. I was at Fort Knox before then. And so we were in a theater performing for troops. So it was 1,000 seat theater.
Sure.
So coming to a black box was a that of this size was definitely a new experience for me. It was just something I was not expecting, and it was so exciting because it was so close, and it just made my imagination go, how is this actually going to work? Yeah. And, you know, it was just
when you when you came, that was the summer of 95. We had put one season under our belt, and but we were really still feeling our way along, that's for sure. But you were you were here for 5 years,
yes,
from 95 to 2000, mm-hmm. and you were involved in one way or another with 30 plays,
yes.
we're estimating it.
Yes, yeah.
You directed, you acted, you did technical, you produced. I was so very, very pleased when you said, I'll do anything, including, no, I didn't mean that. The technical part, so often theater people, they frequently, unwisely neglect the technical part, and I often tell actors that you're going to go to a big city, you want to get work in the theater, you volunteer and say, I'll help with lights, so that, you know, you should, even though that's not your biggest love.
Actually, backstage, I really love backstage. But we were talking about this earlier too. It's so important for people who are coming to a new city. If you're going to be in theater, community theater, they're tight-knit. And you just have to get used to that. And you can't go in being a star. You may have been a star somewhere else, but you have to start at the bottom. And the best way to get in the bottom is to say, I will be your stage manager. Because stage managers are hard to find. Or I will run your lights. I've had people go, well, how many shows can you do this for? I'm like, all of them. And I'm like, really? Yes, absolutely. So you start at the ground floor and work your way up. Yeah. So, but yeah, backstage, I really do love the backstage. I have a t-shirt that on the front, I forget the name of the production, but in the back, in black letters, it says screw, and that stands for stage crew. And it also says screw, do it in the dark. My favorite t-shirt.
Well, this gives our audience somewhat of an idea of what we put up with all these years. James is just
he knows what to
blocking
expect.
His ears. He'd be blocking his ears if the headset wasn't on already. So Mimi, there.
Delicate sensibilities.
So there we are, and you knew our technical. Speaking of technical people, you knew James Johnson way back when.
I sure did.
In fact, James came to us as a 17-year-old young man, and was in one of the last plays downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's one of the few people around me these days that can talk about the early days.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but I know he wasn't there when there were rheostats on the wall a ruler.
We later got a more dedicated space. Yes. We had under the stairs. We originally had the piano, so we could do musicals.
Right.
And then we had the light booth and sound booth in as if the green
the
room,
green room.
Green wasn't crowded enough.
And it didn't have a door at that point.
And there was no exit door.
No.
And so if you had to relieve yourself, nature called or started screaming, you had to. Well, we won't go into that.
Yeah, you just added.
But then later we added that we called a priest hole.
Right.
We go out and go behind a tree or something. so this is how high tech our place
that was.
Anyway, so what was it like running the lights in the early days?
Well, like I said, I had a ruler to help me with the on and off.
It was a rheostat.
It was a rheostat. Uh-huh. It was a rheostat. Uh-huh. And I think the first show that I did that for was the 75th and Hopscotch. It was two shows.
Two one-acts.
And the only cues in that were on and off, thank goodness, because it was just up and down with the ruler. And so with the track lighting. But I think there was some sound cues in there, and I had to reach across and push the cassette player. And the cassette player was so noisy to open. yes, it was not very technical. Not at all.
Those early plays, well, when we did Crisis at Trinity, when there were 10 grown men back there, I don't think we'd moved it yet, Henry. Uh-huh. Anyway, so technical, there you were, running lights and sound. But then you also did directing.
Yes, yeah.
Out of those 30 plays, we figured out those 30 plays you were involved with for 5 years. You were either doing the technical or whatever. What did you direct?
All right. I think we narrowed it down to 5 or 6. I started with putting together a Christmas show for children.
Uh-huh. I took a picture out of the two of us on the stage
in
the Christmas of 95. And you have this Christmas sweater on, red, that usually one would wear to ugly
Christmas sweaters.
Shows. Anyway, but you have the script in your hand,
I do,
and I have my arm around you, and there I am in this very elegant theater with the cravat.
Of course.
It just gets worse and worse. Anyway, so that, tell us about that Christmas show.
That Christmas show I put together, children's poetry, some songs. I think you read the Christmas letter.
I can't remember which one.
Mm-hmm. We sang some of the Christmas songs that you would normally sing. We had our children in it. So this is back when my girls were young, and I wanted them to be involved with the theater, just like you wanted your grandkids.
My grandchildren were all in it.
Marcella's
yes.
kids, yes. Rhonda's. What's wrong? Yeah, I think Josh was in it.
Right.
Was Jillian?
Yeah, Josh and Jillian.
And Jillian?
And Jillian is now... yeah. pursuing it as a professional.
Absolutely, yes.
So
yeah.
See, this is where it all started.
It did. And all performers, Marcella
mm-hmm. well,
and
yeah.
Rhonda's, yeah, in one way or another.
I think with Monkillian, he's gone, Monkillian, of course, Marcella's youngest son,
mm-hmm.
he's gone more the
musician
route.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Her oldest son has gone to be a professional dancer. And
yeah.
Of course,
yeah.
Jillian is an actress, and Josh, who is also Rhonda's son, is... He's a musician, but he's also doing some acting. So
right.
Rhonda Rocky, we tried to get her here tonight, but she's
right.
in rehearsal
yes.
for the Diary of Anne Frank at Fayetteville Tech.
Yeah.
But so she said
she's always working.
She's always working doing something or other. But your children have.
Thanks for reminding me
that. And then, but my grandchildren. No one is pursuing a theatrical career.
Mine either.
No, I think they probably thought, that, well...
they've had enough.
That was definitely enough. So the children's show, that was a wonderful Christmas.
It was a good Christmas show.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. I think, was Edwina Lindsay's son?
Winslow.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of these things are being repetitious, but we recall we got up to seating up to 40 people.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of children... in a play, then you're guaranteed of selling out at least one performance because everybody's there oohing and aahing. Now those children's plays, but we then went outside with our children's show,
didn't we? Yeah, the Marilyn Sachs.
I remember talking with Edwina Lindsay, just retired from being an elementary school librarian, as was I, and I used to bring authors into my library in California. And one of them was Marilyn Sachs,
mm-hmm.
and I remember saying to Edwina that I knew Marilyn Sachs; she was a good friend, and she said, "Oh my gosh, let's adapt some of her books."
Mm-hmm.
And what did we do?
We got permission to adapt mm-hmm. them. You called, I believe, and talked to her, and if I'm not wrong on this, I believe Olivia Green did the adaptation of the two books.
Veronica Gans.
And The Bear's House.
The Bear's House.
And then Marilyn sent us a special one.
That she wrote just for us.
It was a library. Read Between the Lights.
That's right.
Yes.
So here reliving. What's it like for the people who are tuning in for the first time, perhaps? What's it like in the garden to do a show?
Well... it is magical, But it does have some of its drawbacks. You have to fight the trains that go by.
I want to add that it's some distance away.
It is, but they but can still...
The sound comes up the hill.
Yes.
Historic Haymon Hill.
Yes, and then you do have barking dogs, and sometimes it can be hot, you know. So it is, it's outside performing, but the space itself is just lovely. Families come... Families came in and brought their picnic lunches and spent time there outside of watching the show. So it was great for families.
Come early.
Yeah.
But there's a natural slope there. This hill, incidentally, I recently found out that our hill here is the furthest east portion of the Appalachian chain.
Oh, really?
It goes further south. But this is the farthest east, right where we are sitting tonight.
Huh.
But anyway, so people would come, we'd check them off at the gate, mm-hmm. at the garden gate, and they'd go up this natural amphitheater, slope, and they could look down onto the stage. And it was magic.
It was.
But that Marilyn Sachs play was so good.
Yes, yeah. And it was something different. It wasn't... They have deep context to them, the books, and it wasn't something that was bright and sunny. It actually would touch on subjects that were real, you know. In The Bear's House, it's about a dysfunctional family, basically.
Yeah.
So
all of her books, I use them so often in my book talks in the library.
It was smart theater for children.
It was smart theater.
Smart theater.
Another children's show we did, directed by Marcella. She might want to talk about it when we allow her on the air later on. Is Winter Thing.
Right. Right.
And what was your responsibility for that? Do you remember?
I don't know if I did anything.
Help build the set? That was our most elaborate. We had a thatched roof cottage on our stage.
Yes.
AKA patio in the Gilbert Garden, but that was written by an English playwright. It was a fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
So the garden theater. We did five plays a year.
We also did Midsummer Night Dream and had all those fairies. And I was the stage manager. Bob Blue
was the director.
Director.
That was our first Shakespeare.
Yeah, yeah. I was
very nervous about that. I didn't feel confident in doing Shakespeare. And so we got somebody that was reputed and was a very fine Shakespeare director.
Mm-hmm.
And Midsummer Night's Dream. So what did you do for that?
I was stage manager.
Stage manager.
And I had to wrangle all those children. I think it was like, is it 20?
We had numerous fairies.
Yeah.
And that was a play that my grandson,
yes.
Maxwell, my granddaughter Ashley, grandson Christian, were early on signed on
mm-hmm.
to accepting a part as in the play. But Maxwell, age 6, he didn't know. And I kept saying, "Well, you need to tell me if you're going to be in it. That's fine if you don't want to. But if you don't want to, I'll find someone else." And he said, "I'll do it under one." This is 6. I wish I could imitate the voice. "I'll do it under one condition." And I said, "What is that?" "If I don't have to prance." and I said, so that was his impression of actors, I guess. Well, there it is. I said, "No, you won't have to prance," and he didn't, and no one pranced.
They did a children's production of Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yes. We also did another one, Pirate Pete.
Let's get to that in just a moment.
Right.
One, I want to finish that story about Maxwell.
Oh yeah.
So Maxwell, at the first performance, I was at the garden gate, and he came running off with the other fairies. And he put his head on my hand, and I'm sitting on a tall stool, and he said, "Oh, this was my favorite part." So it was one of those cases where the person that was most reluctant ended up loving it the most. But we did more original work with children,
mm-hmm.
with wonderful, her name escapes me right now.
Sarah
Hennessy.
Yes.
Wrote this play.
Mm-hmm. It was all about the letter P.
That's right.
And the magic word that began with P.
You know, she's frequently been named best teacher in the district.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
is in my if I'm remembering correctly. She's a fabulous person. I miss her so much. I would wish I could have had her on the show before it ended.
But it was a wonderful show.
It was a wonderful show. So I it was just such a joy doing the children's plays.
Right. So I did all the children's plays because my girls were at that age and I wanted to involve those. Yeah. But then I had to, then I tried to branch out and work with some older people. So I started, then I went to Simply Mason and I had a teenager.
Simply Mason. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah. So, and that, oh, I can't.
She was on the swing.
Yes. We had this, I had Mike build the swing for me downstairs.
Our technical director, Mike at the time. Yeah. And there was a swing. Goodness knows, a house this old, there you could hang a tank from the joists. The joists are thick. I mean, this place, this house does not move. And so it was a swing on stage, and she was swinging, doing her monologue.
Right. So that was, I think that was maybe a 20, it was a good long monologue, again by Olivia Green.
Yes, so, right.
And then after that, Four Walls.
Now, Sonny Kelly is one of the most outstanding actors we've ever had cross our boards.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
To be a professional actor, he could have been on Broadway. People like me talk like this, but folks, it's the truth.
It is. He is the first person I've ever heard that made me understand Shakespeare. He just made it his own. Yeah. And he didn't do anything out of the ordinary. He just had the magic.
Exactly. Yeah. He had it.
Has it.
As well, handsome, beautiful physique, beautiful body, wonderful person, great smile. But when a nearby company did Othello.
Mm-hmm. I saw that.
You were here for that?
No, it was in the newspaper. I saw it online.
I see. Yeah. And they went to New York for Othello and cast Sonny as Iago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm tempted to say... And so I will say it.
Okay.
what did Oscar Wilde say? I can resist everything except temptation. That Sonny as Iago stole the show. And I'm sure it was paid a pittance or nothing. Anyway, Sonny Kelly was in this play called Four Walls.
And he played a really
sleazy
person who at the end was... given his due.
That's due.
His wife let him die.
Let him die, right. And I wonder,
spoilers.
Sorry.
Sorry, yes.
You don't know how, though.
So you are directing.
Mm-hmm.
And you are acting.
Not so much anymore.
At that time.
Yeah.
We're just talking about those five years.
Oh, acting, yes.
Uh-huh.
Favorite shows.
And your first one was Spoon River, but
Under Milkwood. Yes, Under Milkwood. Yes.
That was a stage reading. And friends came over to see it. So it was memorable.
Right, yes.
And you know those six stools, the tall stools that we painted black for that show, I just returned to the theater since we're shutting down this house. We're returning things, giving things away, returning. And those stools, which I'm sure the new artistic director might say, I didn't even know we had six stools. We could have used them.
Yes.
Well, all I can say is better late than never. That was wonderful under Milkwood. So then, Spoon River, what did you do?
No, I didn't do Spoon River. No.
That came after you left.
I was not in that
one. Didn't do anything.
No. I did. What
the Parsons with the music.
Yeah.
We've talked a lot about that.
I think I was upstairs for it because I saw it. And I saw it several times. So I'm pretty sure I was helping on front of house at that point.
Oh, I see.
No, the shows I've been in, The Club, Your Good Man, Charlie Brown, My Name is Alice, I did a lot of musicals, didn't I?
Because Mimi is a fine singer. But you have said to me earlier that the club was, is, and...
Well, I think it...
Forever.
Yes, it is. It's a wonderful concept for women to have an all-women cast playing men, singing Barbershop. Barbershop is incredibly hard to sing. And so it was fun. And Rhonda was the choreographer. And so she had her hands full on that one. The singing, you know, not everybody could read music, so that was a challenge. And then we were also in the garden for that one. In
wool
tuxedo. Facial hair, wigs. And during, what was it, is it August or September?
September.
September, October.
It's our fall, yeah. Fall opener, but the South doesn't seem to realize the fall is not necessarily the fall.
And my most harrowing time at that point was when I forgot to put my antiperspirant on my lip. My deodorant, I didn't deodorant my lip, and my mustache kept falling off, and I had to smoke a cigar and sing with my mustache.
Dressed in wool, facial hair that's coming off, smoking, singing, it's 100,
dancing.
It's 100 degrees, and dancing, other than that.
Yeah.
But I put it in one of my top five.
Yeah.
I really do. And we were in a play together. I out of the 120 plays that had, or plus in counting, that's...
I knew you'd bring this up.
No, I'm not being cruel. I think you had plenty of time with your therapist, and I'm sure you got over it.
I'm still talking about it. Thank you for bringing
it. Our audience is wondering what the heck is going on about to tell you. But let me just say that this play was written by a friend of mine in San Francisco, and I did it, the same part in San Francisco, in Berkeley, California. Berkeley, actually, across the bay, on Mysterious East Bay, as Hurricane used to call it. The company was called the Empty Stage. The Bear Stage. No, okay. The Bear Stage. The Empty Stage is a famous book by somebody, Peter Cook or something. Anyway,
your lead up is giving me a panic attack. Well, now, thank you. We're going to relive this.
I'm very sorry. The lead up is more stimulating than the heart of the story. But anyway, we're in this play together. I'm playing. One of these gay men who latches on to celebrated people. The list goes on and on. Speaking of North Carolina, Doris Duke had one of these gay men who became her friend, Caretaker Garden,
yeah.
And all kinds of help real close with that one. And Martha Ray, who is buried here in Fayetteville, Fort Bragg, had one. Mm-hmm. And all like Lana Turner and Groucho Marx, not just women, but Groucho Marx and me, Lily. It goes on and on. I was such a person that was just living on the glory of this.
Yes.
Actually, comatose.
She was comatose. I was not the comatose.
British musical comedy star. She has no lines. She's there, but he's on the phone, telling the press and this one and that one, producers. Oh yeah, she's out rehearsing. She'll be better than ever. And you were her good friend,
best friend. Yeah. And well, kind of a frenemy, I believe at that.
Frenemy.
Yeah. Yes.
You just coined that word.
Yes.
My friend.
Oh yes.
Frenemy. Now after all these 82 years, I'm finding out about that word. I could have used it.
yes.
Anyway, so
we were magical together.
It was magic for about 3 minutes, and then I was looking at Mimi, and you're on stage, and you know when someone has.
I just have to say, in my defense, I was worried that you were going to forget your lines, so I learned all your lines too.
I don't remember that. No, I'm very glad you did that because I probably deserved it. However, I was the one that remembered my lines.
Yes, you did.
And then I'm looking at you, and any actor who's looking at another actor who has forgotten.
Here, let's recreate this.
Or I'm looking at you, and there's that unmistakable look in an actor's
eye. And
it goes like that. And so that. It was the most important moment in my 20 years at the Gilbert.
You saved me.
People may think, oh God, it's starting the theater.
That was like 3 minutes in my mind.
Well, people may think it's this and it's that. No, it's that very night when the house was packed and I said, oh.
Do you remember what you said to get me back?
Oh, no, I certainly do. Okay. Your line had something to do with the clock.
Right.
And I said, Mimi, what is it? I didn't say Mimi.
Yeah, I said,
I said, what is it you always say about our clock?
And then
that wonderful look. And so that was the most exciting, rewarding moment of my theatrical life.
It's one I'll never forget, too. I felt like I was up there for 3 minutes going, I think I'm on stage. I don't know where. What?
Well, there is. No, there's nothing.
It's terrifying.
If your listeners are out there, never been on stage, there is nothing worse.
Yes.
Your whole life passes before your eyes.
It does.
And I probably have told my one story, and I shan't repeat it, even though I should, because it's such a good one. But I've just been given the signal from James that we've eaten up 30 minutes.
No way!
And our other guest, Marcella Casals, is waiting
for our call.
Waiting for a call.
She's chomping at the bit.
Up there in the Big Apple.
All right, let's see.
And we don't want to use any more of her time, even though we're tempted to.
We'll see. We can get her on the phone. I haven't talked to Marcella now for. Well, since the last time I was home. Oops, speaker. Let's put on speaker.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Mimi.
Hi there. You're on the air.
You're on the air.
Oh, gosh. I'm on my line.
Uh-oh.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Okay. There we can now.
Okay. Fabulous.
Good. Well, welcome. Mimi and I have just had 30 wonderful minutes talking about her time here, those wonderful 5 years, producing and directing and acting and big on technical, children's, on and on. But I couldn't help but bring up the time when she was in that play called The Guardian, Marcella, and she blew up on her lines.
Thanks for putting it that way.
Well, I'm trying to be nice about it. I saved her, and it really was the high point of my theatrical life. But how are you?
I'm doing well. I got out of class early so I could be with you guys tonight.
Wonderful. We're going to talk more about what you're doing in a bit. But right now, you know, remember that huge scrapbook, Marcella, that we had? That we started. It was an old ledger. Well, during the oral history part of our podcast over the last 9 months, 30 times, I've been interviewed, and we've taken that scrapbook literally apart and talked about all kinds of things, and it's going to be become archived. Everything is being put on. James, would you explain it?
I have trouble understanding it myself. Basically, there's supposed to be a grant to.
Let me give it a try. You're going to digitize.
Okay. All right. Here we go.
Digitize the archive so that it's available.
Yes, that's it. Art digitized
for online viewing.
Online viewing. Yeah. So a lot of photos. Digitize is the words I was looking for. This gives our listeners some idea of what my right and left arm have been up against. But let's move right along from that. One of the things I found, Marcella, was this in the scrapbook, and I'm going to get it framed. The Gilbert Theater purpose. Our purpose is to use our creativity and enthusiasm to support and inspire others as well as we are. Our purpose is to use our creativity and enthusiasm to support and inspire others as well as all freely express our talents in joyfulness, harmony, and love. Did you write that?
Did I write that? You know, I may have had a part in that. I may have put in my 2 cents, but I don't recall that I wrote that by myself.
I see. Now, Marcella, your time here, you and Mimi started about the same time, the fall of 95?
I'll tell you, because I have this pulled up. I think it was, let's see, yeah, fall of 95, because I came in with Foundations and Crisis at Trinity.
Okay. Right, yes. Now, I remember Mimi had quite a time telling us about what it was like when she first walked through the door. Tell us what your impression was.
Oh, my God. I had this neighbor who was a playwright, and he had been looking for a place to do his play. And I said, you know, someone told me there's a little theater somewhere downtown, but I have no idea where it is. But if you could find out, you might be able to give them a call. So the next thing I know, he's calling me over because the actors wanted to use too much makeup, and he didn't feel that that was necessary in the space. So if I could come and talk to them. And I said, where are you? And he said, remember that little theater you told me about? I found it. I said, oh, wow, where is it? So he told me, and I showed up, and I opened that stage door. And just standing right there, I mean, the feeling just, I became overwhelmed. It was like I had come home.
I said the same thing.
and then
that same day, I think you and I, Lynn, we sat at the actor's bench and we talked for hours.
Now, I remember when we were doing we were doing Crisis at Trinity, and you said, I'll help with props, and I think you brought inkwells or something like that.
Well, for Crisis at Trinity, I did props. That was the first thing that I did for any play.
Yeah.
With props, other than talk to the actress from the Play Foundation, which is the one that got me there because my neighbor had written the playwright.
China Franklin. We enjoyed that so much. Well, we worked here so long and hard, I think 22 plays. You acted, you directed.
Five, to be exact, not that I've been counting, but.
Well, you insisted that it was 22, and I went along with it. No, I.
No, how many was it? Say it again.
No, it's if we count the time I directed Dutchman and The Guardian, which was the one act, it's 25.
Okay, I see.
All right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So just wonderful, wonderful stuff. So we were talking about the garden shows, and your son, when we were doing Midsummer Night's Dream, you so wanted your son, Makilian, to
oh God, yeah.
try to read for Puck.
Well, Makilian wanted to read for Puck, and he was amazing at home, just leaping over the sofa. And we said, you know, you just need to go audition because, you know, you're perfect for this. But Makilian's extremely shy.
Yeah.
And so he went and he auditioned, and of course, it was nothing like it was at home. And then the director, Blue was his last name, I can't remember.
Bob Blue.
Blue asked everybody to take off, all the guys to take off their shirts. And of course, Makilian, from the time he was very little, he was very cut, as if he was lifting weights or something, which was unusual for a child. I mean, he was little. He was like, I don't know, 10 maybe?
Yeah.
And he wouldn't take off his shirt. And I said, take off your shirt. And I made him take off his shirt. He hated it. But because I pulled my mother card on that one, I was labeled by the artistic director at the time, as a stage mom.
Were you a stage mom too?
Well, I don't know why that'd be said. I recall you dragging him across the stage. Then we were also exaggeration
of it all. I did finish finally. I did get to direct Mangilyan, and I feel he did quite well, considering that he was, you know, not someone with experience on stage. In when you played the teenager, I needed somebody of age, but they could look 14 for references to Salvador Dali, Make Me Hot, mm-hmm. which was directed in the space that the Gilbert Theater occupies now.
It also needed to be a Hispanic actor, correct?
Pardon?
It also needed to be a Hispanic actor, correct?
He was Hispanic.
I believe he needed to be Latin, yeah.
Right. Now, so you've experienced all the different spaces, Marcella. The 8 years here, and Mimi and I have been talking at length about the time here at the house, but then we were obliged to move to the Arts Council. Tell our listening audience about that experience. Where did we have the stage?
I was just counting. I directed 11 plays there in the original place there at the house. And then we moved to the Arts Council, and what an arduous experience that was. But it's like we didn't care. We had to move all of these heavy bricks, cinder blocks, and heavy platforms, and create the stage, and put up the pipes that would hold the lights and the curtains, and it was really a lot. It was a physical Herculean effort on the part of many to get that stage up,
up the stairs. The stairs were practically vertical, as I recall.
Yes, because we, you know, by code, we couldn't use the elevator that was there, because that was for handicapped people,
right.
And so we couldn't use it as a freight elevator. So we had to do it all, you know, one step at a time, up and down those steps. But somehow we did it each and every time.
Three years. So 15 plays there, cables all over, and this was in the ground. People who don't know the Arts Council.
Oh, and then having to move the tables out of the way and getting all the chairs in order and then having to bring the tables back up. And it was really quite some doing. When I think about it, it's overwhelming. But at the time, we didn't think about it because it needed to be done, so it was done.
Exactly right. But I have to say, speaking for myself, by the end of the third year, I was saying to anybody who would listen, I don't think I can do it a fourth. But that's when our someone in our advisory board, Sylvia Ray, suggested we look at Old City Hall, the city council chamber, and that's where we've been for the last dozen years. How did you like that space, Marcella?
The new space, I liked it. You know, those of us who are old-timers, we really missed a kind of a cozy intimacy that was, you know, that the original space granted us, because really it was a gift of the space. So we were always, you know, hoping for that. But, you know, when you go bigger, because that original space was so small, even though it seemed like the world fit in there. But, you know, we didn't have that. But nevertheless, this new space has grown its own intimacy, I suppose.
Exactly.
And it's you know, it was comfortable to work there, given, you know, the place that we had been working. It was comfortable. It's comfortable to have a place where you have dressing rooms and where you could store sets and things, and where you could work in building whatever you might need to build for the sets. It's comfortable for the actor. It was comfortable for the directors. and it's, you know, it's comfortable.
Well, we were seating up to 40 downstairs. Probably 100 plus. I forget how many in the Arts Council building, but we're now seating 99, on Bow Street. I agree with you. And people who have been with us from all three locations have said, keep referring to the new spaces being intimate as well. Now, people frequently ask me, Marcella, what some of my favorite plays. And I have, for years, I've made that, my top five has kind of been elastic. One will drop out, one other one will be added. But one that remains there forever is, In the Blood. Can you tell us about your experience with that?
Yeah, well, In the Blood is, it's such a good play. You know, when a play is well written, you know, it's so rich. And it's certainly, you know, it's certainly one of my favorite plays. But it's not written in a linear way, the way that most plays are, you know. It's written very circularly, and where you're going back, you know, into the past and then again into the future. And this happens because the actors playing the children are also playing their father, or the two women are now playing their fathers, but they're playing two other adult characters.
It's homeless family, the mother and the children living under a bridge. Here at the house, that tiny stage. I can see Renee, your former husband, bringing that cross down the aisle. It was one of our best actresses, I frequently say, Natalie, what was Natalie?
Yes, Natalie Anderson.
Natalie Anderson was the mother, and it was an unforgettable performance, and I saw it every time, every night, and I was crying every night. That was
She's now an assistant district attorney here in Manhattan.
Well, she has incredible talent.
Yeah.
Now, one of the other children's plays. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say I had Natalie in my. Remember the one act, Four Walls? She played.
Yes.
All right. And one of the evenings, she had terrible food poisoning. And being the trooper that she was, I'm like, you have to go on. And she did. And she would make exits to
throw up.
Yes.
Yes.
Where did she throw up?
In the green room.
But, I mean, hope in a bucket.
In a bucket, yes.
Poor thing. Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
She's a real trooper and real professional on that.
But we have...
Yeah. But, Mimi, remember when we used to do lights with regular household dimmers?
We were talking
we would
about
have
that.
These cards cut up and so that you would pull it up or down. Did you talk about that?
Yes.
Yeah, oh my God.
And if you wanted all out or all off, or all on or all off, it you had the ruler.
Yeah.
Very high tech.
Yeah, it was funny. Oh God.
But you know, one of the things that we were talking about earlier, you directed The Guardian, which Lynn and I were both in, and that was the very last indoor performance here at the home stage of Gilbert.
It was. I'm trying to find it here on the list. And yeah, it was a 102.
Yeah.
And
The Guardian.
Right. It was. We talked about it earlier on the air, Marcella, and that was the one that poor Mimi, but we just had to talk. I think it was, she needs to talk about it.
All right. I think Lynn's over exaggerating. Do you remember that I blacked out or something on my lines? I don't. Do you remember I blanked?
Say that again.
Do you remember if I blanked on some of my lines?
It is such another.
Well, we relive it every time we talk.
We relive that. Now, so Marcella, what are you doing these days?
I'm in New York City. I've been trying to get back here since I was 11. And I'm studying at School of Visual Arts here in Manhattan in Chelsea, and working on my Master's of Fine Arts for visual arts.
Do you emphasize sculpture? Well, is that what you do?
Yeah. Currently, I'm working more on installation pieces.
We have the Rodin exhibit here at Methodist University, and Bob and I are going to be docents for that. We've been training for it. There'll be 17 Rodin pieces coming in next week for 3 months. So if you're back in town...
Oh, my God!
So if you're back in town, it's quite a coup for Silvana Foti. Yeah. So you're studying, you'll be graduating in a year's time?
Yes, I'll be graduating a year from May.
I see.
May 2017.
Well, you two, do you want anything you want to say to each other? Last week was our, really, I ended the podcast after 30 episodes, but we're doing this encore one because I wanted to get you in and Mimi's here. So this next 60 seconds or so, who wants to say something before we end it forever?
Oh my God, we only have 60 seconds? Has he not ever listened to us talk?
Just don't use your time up like
that.
Oh
my God, we'll have to talk over each other. Yes. You know, the Gilbert was an amazing, amazing gift to me. It gifted me 11 opportunities on stage,
yes,
25 opportunities to direct, and it was my connections to everybody and my gratitude to the Gilbert and to you, Lynn.
And to Lynn, Lynn is absolutely immeasurable. Lynn is the one who inspired me not to only, you know, keep doing things in the theater, but to go beyond it and keep learning by reading and researching, which I love to do, I found out. So Lynn really did inspire a lot of people in more ways than he'll ever, ever know.
Thank you, Marcella.
Yes.
Thank you, Mimi. You're both, I love you both very much. We're just absolutely indispensable in all those years.
We were a good team.
And we want to thank James Johnson for being our wonderful technical director the last 10 months. And he is doing so well with his writing, Marcella, getting assignments all over the place with The Observer and our local newspaper and writing and doing websites, etc. And he'll soon be off the food line. So this is Lynn Pryor asking James to dim the lights and go to black while I urge you all to find a play to see this week. Thank you all.
For I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round. See me back where the boys are.